Well, Merry Christmas, everybody, and welcome back to the Back Porch Education Podcast, our annual Christmas edition. We hope you'll enjoy our thoughts and reminiscences, this time on Charles Dickens' famous Christmas Carol.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, and a good Merry Christmas to everybody. Steve, Merry Christmas, man.
Oh, 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 and same to you, sir.
Thank you. So, man, all right, it's Christmas, and instead of a poem this time, we're going to pull from a text that we're going to be discussing today. That text is the classic Charles Dickens Christmas Carol.
One of my favorite, one of my son's favorites. We interact with it as often as we can. So what we've done is just going to pull a few quotes from it, a few short passages. I'll read some, Jason will read some, and then get into discussing it afterwards. So this is all meant to show the gradual education that Scrooge goes through in moving from a miserly, miserable fellow to the wonderful celebrator of Christmas that he is at the end of the story. So when we first meet him, he epitomizes that which is not the Christmas spirit. and I begin reading. "Scrooge and Marley's, I believe," said one of the gentlemen, referring to his list. "Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?" "Mr. Marley's been dead these 7 years," Scrooge replied. "He died 7 years ago this very night." "We have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner," said the gentleman, presenting his credentials. It certainly was, for they had been two kindred spirits. At the ominous word liberality, Scrooge frowned and shook his head and handed the credentials back. "At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge," said the gentleman, taking up a pen, "it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute, who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir."
"Are there no prisons?" asked Scrooge.
"Plenty of prisons," said the gentleman, laying down the pen again.
"And the union workhouses?" demanded Scrooge. "Are they still in operation?"
"They are still," returned the gentleman. "I wish I could say they were not."
"The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?" said Scrooge.
"Both very busy, sir."
"Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course," said Scrooge. "I'm very glad to hear it."
"Under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude," returned the gentleman, "a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?"
"Nothing," Scrooge replied.
"You wish to be anonymous."
"I wish to be left alone," said Scrooge. "Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, this is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go to those places."
All right, Steve, well done. I will pick up with Scrooge's nephew's attempt to sort of turn Scrooge's heart and inject some of that Christmas cheer. "There are many things from which I might have derived good, by which I have not profited, I dare say," returned the nephew. "Christmas among the rest, but I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time, when it has come round, apart from the veneration due it to its sacred name and origin, if anything belonging to it can be apart from that, as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time, the only time I know of in the long calendar year, when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
Yeah. Scrooge wasn't real happy to hear that.
No, he wasn't.
But as we know, an education was awaiting him when he got home that evening. A series of ghostly tutorials begins his education at the stroke of midnight. Beginning first, for those familiar with the story, with the Ghost of Christmas Past, who takes him to see various scenes from his past, especially around Christmas time, one of which is quite compelling. His fiancée has decided to let him go because his values are not what she would have them to be. And so I quote her, "You fear the world too much," she answered gently. "All your other hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off, one by one, until the master passion, gain, engrosses you. Have I not?"
Okay, and then We won't ruin the story, I guess, but we will ruin the end by sort of telling, you know, he goes through his education.
Spoiler alert.
Big time spoiler alert. He goes through his education, and this man who has been serving the master passion gain, eventually we get an account later on, and here it is. "He went to the church and walked about the streets and watched the people hurrying to and fro and patted the children on the head and questioned beggars and looked down into the kitchens of homes and up to the windows and found that everything could yield him pleasure. He had never dreamed of any walk that anything could give him so much happiness." "I don't know what to do," cried Scrooge, laughing and crying in the same breath and making a perfect Laocoon of himself with his stockings. "I am as light as a feather. I am as happy as an angel. I am as merry as a schoolboy. I am as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world. Hello there. Whoop! Halloo!" And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well. And if any man alive possessed the knowledge, may that be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
Well, there's a condensed version of the story.
Yes, it's oh man, it's so good.
There's got to be 10 or 20 versions of this in film. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for the old Alistair Sim version. That's quite old, and my son's grown, but there's something about his portrayal that's real. But I've forced my sons to watch The Muppets Christmas Carol. There's a dozen good actors, George C. Scott and Patrick Stewart, et cetera, who've done their best to portray this changed man. This man on a world stage who goes from quite ugly to quite wonderful. And it just struck me as we prepared to do something special for Christmas that there's an education going on here. And I think it's quite interesting to kind of dig into that. So I'm going to give you first shot. What I know you recently went back through it yourself. What's going on here? What kind of an education is this guy getting anyway that makes him do a 180?
Yeah.
On Christmas Eve of all times.
Right. Well, it's a supernatural education, which for us naturals is, I guess, a bit of a downer. I can't summon ghosts. I'm not sure that I would try that. But yeah, the man. Okay, so the first thing that stuck out to me in sort of the lessons, right, that I'm going to extrapolate, or methods that the teachers, that is the ghosts, use, is that they are pulling from his experience, right? I think that's kind of low-hanging fruit, but I also do think that it's important that the ghost of Christmas past shows him things that he knows, right? Some things that he's forgotten, some things that he wants to forget, but shows him himself through yep. what he knows.
Well, and he's struggling with who he is. Mm-hmm. He's quite confident when the gentlemen come and ask him for the money. He tries to, as it were, convert Cratchit. You know, why do you want time off for this silly holiday? All it does is cost us money. Mm-hmm. His nephew comes by, and what I love is his nephew laughs at him. He's like, you know, I came by to invite you to dinner. It's a free dinner, and you're turning me down, but that's okay.
Right.
But the whole relationship with his dead partner, right, mm-hmm. that Marley was just like him. They were two peas in a pod. Marley's face shows up on the door knocker.
That's right.
Of course, that's Dickens giving you a foreshadowing that we're not sticking to the quote unquote natural world, but mm-hmm, going mm-hmm. supernatural with this. But he's not, his thoughts of Marley where they return on this night of his death 7 years ago are melancholic, right? He's not thrilled with how things are turning out. He's got what he wanted. Money, mm-hmm. but he's a lonely man. He's just kind of sitting there eating his gruel. He's not, he's a miser.
Yeah. He's right? keeping himself he's, warm with a candle, right? Rather than putting another, he's like rich, but instead of just throwing another log on the fire because he knows he's going to be done with the books pretty soon. He just tries to keep himself warm with a candle.
Right.
And actually there's a comment in there that's interesting. I think the narrator says, he tries to keep himself warm with a candle, but being a man of little imagination, he couldn't do it, or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Right. No, exactly. And he's so blown away by this metaphysical event.
Yeah.
You know, this
Marley on the door.
Marley on the door, and the ghost appears, yeah. and it's well, so Marley has a chat with him and warns him that this is all going to happen, and he's I must be the pudding or something. You know? Right, right.
He says, hold on, there's more gravy in you than grave.
Yeah, right, exactly. I've been eating too much pepperoni pizza,
right?
But when the ghosts show up, he's not a willing student.
No.
The motive to learn is not there until a fear grips him. I'm struck by the fact that though I would say it's the fear of the Lord that's the beginning of wisdom, there's a fear that at some point releases him. He says, take me where you will, mm-hmm. right? And then the ghost does. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that they have this confrontation. The first ghost, I guess it's worth noting, the three ghosts get in increasingly horrific, right? The first ghost is like a small child.
Yeah.
It's a rather unassuming, mild, just take me.
Yeah.
The next one's a giant, right? It's a great mm-hmm. big thing. And at the end has this sort of scary children living in its coat. What were those? Want and ignorance, I think.
Oh, yeah. I forget. Yeah.
Want and ignorance. And then the last one's terrifying. He's this he's showing him the future, and it isn't happy. And the ghost of Christmas to come is the most fearful of them.
Yeah.
Not just because of the subject matter, but because of his own appearance.
Yeah, you can't see his face, and he doesn't talk.
Right.
Right.
Like, and he's very mm-hmm. very stern with him. Mm-hmm. And when he finally gets him, you know, who is this guy that the businessmen were kind of laughing about, and the everybody's kind of happy that he's gone. Who is it? Because I think his growing sense is, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, go to the graveyard for the final exam. Right. That's
right.
That's tough.
That's high stakes testing.
Yeah. But it's interesting that there's three.
Okay.
Right. That it's it's not just a ghost. This is not Virgil walking him through hell and purgatory.
Right.
There's three guides for the three acts to this one night play, right? Mm-hmm. Starting with the past. And what do we find in the past? What is he being shown in the scenes that he witnesses there? I think there's three scenes that he sees. One's with the fiance that we kind of visited.
Right. The fiance
there's one with Fezziwig. I love Dickens' names.
What's that? Fezziwig. I don't remember that.
Fezziwig was his old boss.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that.
And he gets so excited. He remembers old Fezziwig, you know, one of his first bosses, who was a pretty stern fellow most of the time. But at Christmas Eve, they would move the stuff aside and the music would start. And even old Fezziwig would dance.
That's right.
You know, it's just that old, you know, back in the day that we all know and love. That fondness for the past.
Yep.
And even with his own family, he has this
Alibaba and Valentine. Like he just sees his pals from when he was a kid and they're just cutting up and enjoying every minute, right?
Which is a comparative thing.
Yeah, totally.
Where were you then? Where are you now?
Mm-hmm.
Are you happier?
Right.
You got what you wanted. Right, I think that's the final scene there in the first act with the fiance.
Yeah, totally.
Is you got what you wanted?
Yep.
You wanted riches more than anything. You got it, buddy. I hope they're warm at night. It's a stark thing.
Yeah.
So the what do you say there? The memories, the experiences of the past are used to say, hey, at one point, at least occasionally, you could laugh and love and enjoy. And some of it in particular centered around this wonderful time of the year, which is sort of fitting the description his nephew had given. You know, this special time of year where everybody should sort of feel a little happier and more generous and giving. The gentleman that we read of as well, right? They're saying we come around asking that this time of year,
right?
Most people will say yes,
right? Yeah, sure.
And so his education begins with memory,
right?
Not to push that too far, but to remember, mm-hmm. to think back. What do I already know about myself? How can I compare the Scrooge that is with the Scrooge that was?
Yeah.
What happens in the second act?
Yeah. So, okay. Well, one more thing about that. I think that the Ghost of Christmas Past has a hard job because, like you said, Scrooge is not willing, right? From the beginning, he's sort of like, he's testing Marley. Like he's trying to like sit on a chair so that Marley will, you know, like he's going to see if Marley can sit down or not. Cause he's a ghost, you know? And so, but the I guess with the Ghost of Christmas Past, he's got a hard job because Scrooge is not willing. And so it sort of makes sense that he right away whets the appetite, right, of Scrooge. I mean, I don't want to get too sort of formulaic with this and ruin a good story, but there is that to it, right? Like he right away shows him a super happy childhood memory, and Scrooge, the old Scrooge, sort of joins in like, oh yeah, hey, all right, this is great.
Yeah. Wants to stay.
Yeah, exactly. He wants to hang out a while. And at that moment, then, the the ghost can move, right? And say, yeah, you remember this? Yeah, you remember this? Oh, hey, this is also in the past with the fiance. And he's already been listening. And so all of a sudden you can't, you know, he can't just shut it off. Like he's on this ride now. Right.
Right. And he doesn't like, no. He doesn't like where it goes.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. So let's go there. The ghost. Well,
What the fascinating thing is at the end of that, the assessment, so to speak, the response of the student.
Yeah.
Is get me out of here.
Yeah. Leave me. Take me back. Haunt me no longer. He says.
Yes. Yes. And he is deposited. There's a bell rings, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And the student is given a few minutes to collect himself and walk about the hall and look for his girlfriend and whatnot.
Right.
And then the bell rings again. Second class is starting.
Yeah. This is before the bell was even developed, man. Who knew that Dickens was so far ahead of his time?
Dickens is ahead of Dewey in this regard. All right.
The Prussians, he's ahead of everybody.
So, well, I think he was friends with Pavlov.
If we
do our research. No. So the ghost of Christmas present.
Yes.
So here's where you were. Mm-hmm. And in particular, please get me out of here. I don't want to remember the pain. Mm-hmm. Of the lost love. Well, let's look at the situation right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's already obviously familiar with his own situation. So they look in on, for instance, his, you know, Bob Cratchit's family. And what's going on there? What's the vision he's given? Obviously Tiny Tim.
Right. So, okay. I might say here that one of my professors at school did this amazing thing with looking at the clothing and the way that the clothing is sort of passed down and what clothing means in a sort of pre-industrial society. So I might just stop that right there. But if you take a close look at clothes in this story, it's really fascinating. It's really neat. So basically, the Ghost of Christmas Present, though, encounters a different student, right? Here, he says, I've got it pulled up. I am the Ghost of Christmas Present, said the spirit. Look upon me. Scrooge reverently did so. Okay, so he's different, right? He's already sort of changing. You know, so he's giving a lot more commands, like touch my robe. Scrooge did as he was told and held it fast. Right. And so here they go off on their trip and they encounter the Cratchits.
Yep. And it's a tiny little meal with great delight, mm-hmm. with human warmth, mm-hmm. with banter. I don't think there's anybody I'm aware of like Dickens for capturing the English hearth, you know, just
right.
The love of a warm fire, a good jolting cup of tea, family gathered round. He's just
the little kids screaming and running the whole time.
Sure,
it's amazing, sure. Right? Like this is prim and proper. Like this is
right. Well, but this is
amazing.
This is what everybody looks forward to for Christmas.
Yeah, this is joy. This is like unfettered joy.
And Scrooge is out in the cold. He's looking in.
Yeah.
He was even invited to his nephew's house and said no. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and so he is feeling his loss. He's feeling his loneliness. His really only friend, if you can call Marley such, is gone. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's hard. It's sad. It's poignant to him. And of course he's shown want and need and, you're a man of means. You could do something about this, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, isn't that the sort of pop quiz? Isn't that wonderful at the end of the second one where he says, "Isn't there anything that can be done for these people?" Mm-hmm. Remember what the ghost says?
I don't actually know.
Oh, he repeats to him what...
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes.
Aren't there prisons?
Aren't there prisons?
Aren't there workhouses?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And it's just so awesome of Dickens to bring that back, throw it right in his face, and now it's with shame.
Well, and in our face, right? Like,
right.
I mean, yeah, right. I remember reading that and going, ooh, ah. Like,
yeah.
That's hard. That's really tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it hits especially hard after, I mean, after that scene with the Cratchits, which is among the best I've ever read in terms of sort of arousing the sentiment, right, of cheer. Like, to talk of prisons is so mean-spirited, you know, like it's just not, right. It's just so discordant that you really sort of feel it.
So he's brought him from a exercise in memory, remember,
right.
The first ghost.
Yep.
To, I think a lesson in seeing, in observation, and let's just look at what things are really like.
Yeah.
Because Scrooge doesn't see any of this in his life. He right. is monomaniacal. It's money, the saving of it, the gaining of it, the in his mind, proper, very careful use of it, and everything else is getting in the way. He's seeing none of it,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so the second lesson is about open up your eyes, dude. There are other people than just you here.
Right. That's right. And he is being affected, dearly,
yeah.
like severely, right? So when, I mean, the Cratchit scene, I really sort of think takes the cake, but even his nephew, right? There's a bit, let me pull it up here. He says, it's when his nephew is toasting him. Remember, so they're yeah. all, he's yeah. he's watching the party, but he's not a part of it, right? And right, so- right. His nephew, they're all sort of like having a laugh at his expense, but not in right. a not in a mean-spirited way, just in a, hey, this is the, like, we're happy, and we're talking about Scrooge, and we wish he was here.
His wife kind of scolds him.
Yeah, 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 yeah. yeah. She's
like, come on, right. babe, this right. is Christmas.
Right.
You yeah. know, what he said to Scrooge back at the office is in his life. He believes this stuff.
Yeah.
He's living it.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the time of year where you can love even a Scrooge.
Right.
Sort of. With yeah. liquor helps.
right. And so they raise yeah. their glasses, right? And right. the nephew, let me read this bit here because I think it's really sort of amazing to see Scrooge changing. So here's the nephew. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to the old man. Whatever he is, said Scrooge's nephew, he wouldn't take it from me, but may he have it nevertheless. Uncle Scrooge. Mm. And here, then we're back to the narrator. Uncle Scrooge had imperceptibly become so gay and light of heart that he would have pledged the unconscious company in return and thanked them in an inaudible speech. If the ghost had given him time. And so yeah. you sort of see the nephew raise the glass and toast Scrooge, and Scrooge is looking around for a glass to raise, right? Like, it's just an amazing, he's feeling the lack, right? He's
yep.
he's really starting to wrestle with that.
The student has forgotten the lesson and is in it.
Yeah.
Right. right?
Yeah, exactly.
We talk about aha moments or being caught up. He's there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he isn't, but he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's long since sort of forgotten the get thee away from me.
Yep.
He's now full in it, which is good because he's going to have to really be sort of strapped in for the final lesson, which is the one the happy, pleasant memories of the past, even though there's some pain there, it's in the past. You've survived it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's the easy part, right?
Sure.
It's the beginning of the lesson. The middle is reality, but man, that final act, the Christmas to come.
Yeah.
And all this foreshadowing and all this gloom and all this scariness with the faceless, very impersonal ghost who's showing him his future.
Yep.
And he can't stop himself at this point, right? He's the student that's got to know the answer.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm going to like it, you know?
Right.
And no, he doesn't. But in particular, and I know we're into this a half hour. The twist to me comes when it strikes him. He realizes I'm at the end of my life, looking at the end of my life. But is there any hope? Yeah. What can be done? Why are we learning all of this stuff? You know, the old question: when am I ever going to use this? Teach is the setup, right? Because then that's what we read, what you read with this giddy schoolboy. I think that's part of the, if I'm remembering correctly, he calls it, I feel like a giddy schoolboy, right?
Yeah.
Which I think is what suggested to me this whole notion of the education of Scrooge.
I am as merry as a schoolboy, he says.
Yeah. It's all new. It's all because I've been given the opportunity, the second chance, the almost messianic, salvific opportunity to do it right.
Yep.
I still have time. And of course, he's asking several times of the ghost, can this vision of the future be changed? Does it have to end this way?
Yeah, that was for sure the most compelling part to me of this. Like, okay, this family is like sort of like they perhaps will be better off because you've died, and they may not have to pay back their debt to you. Like, that's really harsh. That's you know, and the fact that the spirit or the ghost never talks. And constantly is making Scrooge guess, but never giving him the answer, is really heightens the suspense. But to your point, Steve, that bit right there, sort of at the end, where he says, Scrooge is pleading, and I didn't sort of highlight it, so I'm not going to have it pulled up. But it's Scrooge is like pleading him, and he's saying like, are you the ghost of the spirit yet? Or I'm sorry. Are you the ghost of Christmas yet to come, or the ghost of Christmas that may come? Right. Like, is it possible that I can get out of this?
Yeah. Is this in pencil or ink?
Right. Exactly. That's a wonderful sort of summary. Yeah. Is this in pencil or ink or stone? Right.
And he wakes up sobbing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And runs to the window and has to know what day is it, which is one of my in the movie versions. One of the best scenes to put on film, right? The window thrusts
open. Yeah.
And out he pops his head and he sees this little boy scares the living daylights out of the kid because this is Scrooge.
Right.
We all know who lives in that house.
Right.
Run for your life. He's going to eat you. You know, but his whole attitude has changed. He's alive.
I think of Ananias, right? And Paul here.
Yeah.
Right. Where the, the boy is just sort of walking down. Yeah. It's Merry Christmas. Everything's fine. And Scrooge throws open his window and it's like, oh no, this can't be good. You know,
it's the Christian killer.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, oh my gosh, it's all over.
Did you order a pizza? He's on a mission now.
His resolve is encouraging for sure.
Yep. He's got to deal with the burden now. Something has to be done for Tiny Tim. He's gotta he's got to go have that toast with his nephew. You know, that it can happen, so it must happen. I can't let this go.
Right. Cost and, is no issue. He says something about bring back that huge turkey. If you do it fast, then whatever. But if you do it in 5 minutes, then I'll give you half a crown. Right. And there's something about the kid took off like a shot or whatever, you know, like.
Well, and the shortness of the story. One of the things I love about this is that it's a fairly short story. Mm-hmm. Your mind is able to race right back to the scene where they're asking him for alms or whatnot. You know, this is not the same guy.
Right.
You know? He's different. And of course we have the assurance by the narrator that, you know, for many years to come, everybody knew that nobody keeps Christmas quite like Scrooge, you know, and he's still working off the memory now, but it's the memory of the education. It's that long night of schooling, that happened much. It happened all in one night, and he feels like it's been much longer than that.
Yeah.
When he's surprised it's still Christmas Day, which to me in and of itself is poignant in the school motif, because my students feel like they've been in school forever, you know, and then they'll ask me some question. You mean you've been in school for 50 years, Mr. What's wrong with you, man? Right. Well, I like it, but I get that you don't. And you know, so the education has had this thrust, right? He's gained wisdom.
Yep.
And it is bursting forth in virtuous action.
Mm-hmm. Well, you used the word burden earlier, and I think that's especially poignant. You know, like that Scrooge, he has a burden to help Tiny Tim now. Like he's bearing one another's burdens, right? Like he's bearing the burdens of other people.
He had this burden of loneliness, the burden of the heavy weight of money around his neck.
Right.
You know, and that is dragging him down. And now this new burden is for others, and he can't do enough.
Right.
And he's going to shock some people with his such a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he's got a sense of humor. He screws around with his employee.
Right.
You know,
because
he's a little late and whatnot. Right. Yeah. He messes with his nephew a little bit. And I love the fact that the one who gets him, the one who sees through it all and gets it, that seems to be the voice of grace throughout the story is Tiny Tim.
Yeah.
The one that we're all supposed to feel bad for feels better than anybody else. Yeah. And of course, you know, God bless us, everyone. He becomes fastly tied to this Scrooge fellow, who's now no longer the scary fellow, but the one easiest to love.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great, I hope folks listening, take the joy that's there. I hope teachers who are stumbling into the Christmas vacation ready for a couple of weeks off, don't need the visit of three ghosts to revive them, but can allow Dickens to do it for them and revive themselves. Have a great Christmas. I hope the scene of the Cratchit family is recreated in each of our listeners' homes and in mine and in yours, Jason. And this is a great season to remember. What do you have that you haven't been given? Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great time for remembering the past, thinking about how good you got it in the present, and looking forward. For those of us in that position of an eternity of peace on earth and goodwill towards men.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly can't add anything to that, Steve, except Merry Christmas, everybody.